brown skin girls.
Copper tone, oh, you copyright infringement.
Her skin is caramel with the cocoa eyes.
Damn, she's fun. I think I add the R-E in front of that.
Brown sugar, babe. How do you feel?
I'm serious. I'm serious.
Hey y'all, it's your girl T and KC and our guest Leticia, and it's time for the Brown Girl Hour.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Leticia is joining us from the Pisces Life podcast.
Hello.
Yes, and we are so glad and grateful that she's been able to join us this evening for this episode of the Brown Girl Hour.
Woo-hoo.
Yes.
So now you got three more brown girls to fiend on.
Exactly. Love us, love us, love us.
I know okay. That's right. Yes. So, you know, when you're not in Michigan and to the rest of the world, you're from Detroit, but I am in the capital city, though, in the middle of the mitten.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
I really start to think that almost every black person has at least one leg of family
in
somewhere
Detroit.
Out
in
there.
In fact, my family.
I would agree.
My family from Detroit was just here actually visiting. And of course, they've left Detroit like most people do.
Okay.
But
look, girl, not my family.
They
ain't going
there.
Nowhere. My cousins was texting pictures. Girl, it was 70 and now it's snowing.
Yeah.
What is this?
Oh my gosh. I had tears, let me tell you. I was like, I was offended, actually. I was like, really?
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I do believe my family has put me on. They were like, this is the true chocolate city. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This
okay.
is it. Oh, I love
I'm telling you, I never leave the city just on GP without a phone number, a look, a whistle, or something. I'm serious. The brothers there, they are quite intent about loving them some black women.
That's what's
up. What?
What's up. Yeah, and it's so funny. My cousin out there, my favorite cousin out there, Nikki, and her husband, Antoine, they were definitely like my relationship prototype. I thought they were the greatest. And like, Nikki's a few years older than me, and I'll never forget going out with her.
Uh-huh.
And we stopped to get gas. And at this time, they weren't married yet. And,
uh-huh.
he followed us to the gas station. And I said, girl, what's he doing? And she said, oh, I don't pump gas. I was like, what?
I'm not mad at her. I'm going to get a bumper sticker that says, I don't pump gas.
I was
listen. He got a brother. Look, call her on the commercial break and no.
Make them connections.
I'm trying to tell you, that's sweet though. That's very sweet.
Yeah, I thought that was
I don't
really
pump
lovely.
Gas. That is going to be my comeback. Yeah. I don't pump gas.
And they still mm-mm.
Listen, I hate to tell you, I really don't though. I found the one gas station in town that pumps.
Full service,
listen.
Please.
I will drive on fumes to get over there. It's like,
I'm not pumping.
Right.
I mean, we have that option too, but you might have to pay a dollar or two.
Yeah. And gas out here is already robbing you blind. Yes. So it's
or, crazy. You know, offer a bottle of like nitrate or something.
Right. But look, we do have enough homeless to keep you taken
yes.
care of for sure.
Yes, exactly. It's like, I got that for you. You got some spare change.
Get your windows cleaned.
Get your
everything.
Windows cleaned.
So, right, keep the windows.
Get your car wiped down.
Right.
Oh, get your tires armor oiled right while you stop.
Exactly.
Yes.
Oh, so let's move into our brown girl segment, honoring our brown girls, our special brown girls for today. And I would like to actually bring two to the table.
Okay, go for it.
And unfortunately, it's coming from a very bittersweet place. These are two sisters, and it's kind of interesting because they relate to something that we're going to talk about later on in the hour. But these were two bloggers. One was a natural hair blogger by mm-hmm. the name of Dominique Banks, who passed away this week of lupus.
Mm-hmm.
And I discovered Dominique because me and one of my very best friends, probably the only person I know that's actually been a natural hair girl our whole lives, never had a perm or anything. This was her sort of hair idol, so to speak. And she would watch this sister and follow this sister's Instagram and get styles from her. And she was only 27 and died from complications of lupus. And so Dominique Banks, she had a huge influence in the natural hair world in regard to her own hair maintenance methods, her own hair length. She was a sister who had hair that, you know, she could pretty much sit on waist length natural hair. And just a beautiful spirit from what she was able to share with us from her online presence. And then the other is probably more heard of, more known, a sister named Karen Washington, who was the creator and founder of the Four Brown Girls website, who died this week of suicide.
Really?
22 years old.
Wow. I did not hear that.
Yeah. And it was interesting. I read an article from another blogger whose name escapes me right now, but she said that she and Karen had had lots of correspondence around the time Karen's mother was dying. And she understood because she lost her mother as well. And she wished that she had reached out more and said, you know, Karen, give me a call sometime, because she wondered if the amount of grief that she was dealing with is what sort of led to her depression and her eventual death. But, you know, whatever the circumstances are, to lose these sisters who were really doing something positive and uplifting in regard to how our young girls and us grown women see ourselves and feel about ourselves, to lose them like this so young with so much ahead of them is painful. And it hurts. And their presence online and offline will be felt. And so I just hope that we all, you know, continue to honor them. You know, for Brown Girls, we'll stay alive forever, because once you got something online, it exists.
Right.
And so she, you know, for us, Karen has left behind a nice little capsule, a little time capsule of her experience of uplifting young women. And same thing with Dominique. And so just, you know, love to those sisters, hoping they are resting in paradise. And let's just not ever forget them.
Wow. A little speechless. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
And it's ironic that you brought them up and how you closed, because as I always say, Casey and I don't talk about our Brown Girls prior to getting on the mic. So we never know who's bringing who to the table.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And actually, my Brown Girl is nameless, because I wanted to highlight Brown Girls, every single Brown Girl out there who stands in the heels proudly as a Brown Girl. And who carries herself with the utmost respect. Because I was thinking about it today, like, who can I name? Who can I name? Who can I name? And I thought about a couple of things that were happening over the weekend and hanging out with family. And then Kim and I did have a side conversation today coming in that had nothing to do with Brown Girls, but really the Brown Girls that are out there being respectful women and respecting other women, respecting themselves, respectable, that we can respect, that set standards for themselves, that live by the standards. And who just hold themselves accountable. So for every woman out there who's holding herself accountable, who looks herself in the mirror every day and says affirmations to herself and encourages herself to go on, I'm highlighting you. And for the sister who respects the next sister and respect what she has going for herself, and not living in a world of envy or jealousy, but being able to smile at the next sister, being able to encourage the next sister. If you did that any time in your life, I'm highlighting you.
Yeah.
So if you've ever spoken over another girl's life, be she black, white, yellow, if you've ever spoken positive words into her life, because speaking over someone's life and into their life is completely different. If you've ever just smiled at another sister and said hello, if you've genuinely asked another sister, how are you doing, and meant it when you said it, if you've ever respected her relationship and all that she had and not tried to be envious and get in there yourself, I'm highlighting you, Brown Girl.
Yes, yes. You know what? I love that, because Big Brother Moody always says what he loves about this online presence for many of us is that it is free of cattiness and the sort of jealous energy that seems to permeate a lot of environments when you're talking about putting women together. And of course, he's speaking specifically about black women, but women in general.
Right.
And I think within our community, it's that much more important, because we have so many things that divide us anyway. It's natural for us to be divisive. You come into a room and, you know, color, shape, hairstyle, hair length, everything, right. You know what I'm saying? Gives some people, or gives a lot of us, reason to feel secure, insecure, whatever the case may be. And so when you can come in covering all the ground you stand on and not really concerned about the next sister in a negative way, but happy for her for whatever circumstances that she's in, and truly being supportive. When you call her sister, you actually mean sister. That means something.
It does, because all of our stories are different. So you shouldn't be envying her chapter book, because your chapters are, otherwise we'd all be reading the same damn book.
Right.
And I'm too much character to be in just the same damn book, y'all. So back off. I'm too much. I need my own, as every brown girl does, you know? So everybody, you know, should be writing a foreword in the next girl's chapter book instead of envious words and tearing her down.
Amen.
That's absolutely right. My goodness.
So the stage is yours, ma'am, our guest.
Listen, first of all, I do want to go back to that piece about the sister and just giving over to grief. I certainly understand that. I was 22 when my mother died, and I understand the collapsing of one's self under the weight of grief and how we respond to it very differently. And I hate when people have... judgment about that, you know. You never know how beautiful a black butterfly is, and yet and still how heavy they can be, you know what I'm saying? And that grief that she experienced in that moment, or in many moments before that, it was just too much. I'm glad now that she's set free.
And it's, you know, it's interesting because our conversation, and we can kind of take it right into it. One of the reasons why we invited Leticia on this show is that the three of us, both Tori and myself and Leticia, share something in common. We are only children. And I think by the end of our conversation, it'll be interesting.
And we can hear all of you that are talking about spoiled.
Right. Shut up.
We hear you.
All that meta language going on out there.
Yes, we hear you. We hear your thoughts.
Yeah. I think we'll find out the similarities and the differences. But I think for all of us, not that anybody losing their parent would not feel the weight of it, but I do think that it will sit differently on our shoulders because of who we are and our relationship to that parent. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And to think of it is one of those things that's mind-boggling. And I call myself at this point, because my mother is not at the scary age, so to speak, but she's a senior citizen at this point. And I mean, life is so crazy. I could go first. It's just
you never
that
know,
crazy.
Right.
You just never know. But I call myself having these moments where I think of certain things. Like if she leaves me certain voicemail messages, I save them. And mentally try to think to myself, you know, mommy's getting older, and you know, one day I won't have her, so I need to make sure that I'm doing X, Y, and Z. But just the idea of it is just, it's hard to
even
understand.
Yeah, too much.
Yeah, it's hard to understand. And I think my mother and I, as far as our relationship is concerned, is a definite codependency that we have.
I hear you.
And so that'll be the challenge. As far as the way we have things organized, I would love for all of us to go around and talk about our experiences with our parents. But let's first debunk some ideas that the outside world has about being an only child. Some pros and some cons first, and then some truths and some myths. So for me, and I'm sure you ladies can attest to this, for me, a pro of being an only child is, if the funny thing is, I find this a pro and a con.
Okay.
Never having to share.
Right.
Not much negotiation on too much of anything. Not really nothing to negotiate.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? What you got is what you got. And if you want it, it's yours. And it's all, well, not what, if you want it, it's yours. But if it's there for you to have,
then
you
it's yours.
And you're not having to negotiate space or time, or, you know, and you play with this and then you give it to your sister to play with. Nah, I ain't got to do any of that.
Right.
I did, for me as an adult, not even as an adult, because I was a very conscientious only child. Right. I mm-hmm. got really early because I'm surrounded by family members that have tons of siblings. So I was very aware of what they thought of me because it was just me. Huh. And mm-hmm. so I try to be very, I try to break out of the idea of being an only child.
Right.
But
I'm just laughing because this is like such a mirror right now. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I was so aware. Right. And then when you have other only children friends, sometimes they do right. act as mirrors.
Right.
Look, sometimes foils.
Right.
yeah, you're like, wait a minute.
You remind me too much of me.
Right.
Right.
But in my friendships, I had to learn how to share people.
Mm-hmm.
That was something that I didn't get right off the bat. Like, if you were my friend, you were my friend, and you can't like split your time between me and that homie. I mean, what is she really bringing to the table, or what is he bringing to the table?
Right.
You know, and I, as a young woman, I struggled with sharing people. Because with my family, I had them as close as I needed them at all times. And so any friendship struggles I went through, like in elementary school or middle school, was me trying to understand it's okay to have many friends. And if I have a friend that likes somebody more than they like me, that doesn't mean anything's wrong with me.
Right.
You know, it just,
about the, yeah,
just the situation. It is what it is.
That's interesting. I think I have like a slightly different perspective. But I'm going to pick another pro and then come back to that one. I think one of the pros for me as an only child was that I developed the ability to talk to adults at an early age because I spent a lot of time around adults. So if my mom had company, it wasn't like they would bring my mom. A lot of my mother's friends didn't have kids, you know. Mm-hmm. So when they came over, it was me and them. You know, or just me and my mom. And so or me going to work with her. So I learned how to talk to adults, and I was very comfortable talking to adults at a very early age.
Yes.
And I didn't trip off of being around adults. Adults were just as cool to me as kids were.
Right.
So I didn't care about standing in the classroom and talking to the teacher. You know, it wasn't like, oh, you're a nerd. Like, no, I have convo. You don't. You know, I don't feel like running around a day. You know, it's hot. And I want to know how Miss Pearson spent her weekend. You know, I just do, you know. And it was genuine, you know.
Right. I'm getting ready to go pop this Diet Coke in here.
Right. Yes.
I'm going to have tea.
Miss Pearson, I mean. I remember in the seventh grade, like Miss Pearson, my lands and people teacher, which we now call it like world history or seventh grade history. That was my girl. You know, she was so close to me. She would give me money on a Wednesday and Friday or Wednesday and a Thursday to pick up her Subway the next morning because we were going to have Subway at lunch, you know. And sometimes we'd be grading papers and eating. And she wanted a cold cut. You know, 6-inch extra mayo. And I was like, I'm good with this. You know, even in kindergarten. I remember walking up to my kindergarten teacher because she was married to the principal. And I was like, is Mr. Hansen your man? You know? And she looked in shock. And I'm like, I'm just saying, y'all got the same last name, girl. Tell me.
Like, that
shouldn't
is
you be
hilarious.
On the monkey bars? No, not really. Like, it's hot outside. And I find the adults, you know, interesting as well.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly.
So for me, one of the pros was that, you know, because it was just one, I think if you have multiple kids in the household, you're like, you will tell the kids, get out of grown folks' business and go to your room.
Right.
Right? But it was only one child in the house. So if I'm hanging around, it's because ain't nobody else around the damn house to talk to.
Right.
So I was allowed to come to the table, you know, and I wasn't all buck wild, but I knew how to talk and engage in the conversation. So I think that's definitely one of the pros. I didn't, you know, I wasn't a shy kid, and I don't know many only children that are shy.
Yeah.
You know, because we're learning at a very age to communicate with adults because that's who we interact with the most.
Yeah. Did you find that adults would also come to you and like feel very comfortable opening themselves up to you? Because I definitely found that.
Yeah. As I got a little older, you know.
That's how you found out who was really going with who in the church.
Right. Girl, the church. Let's start there.
You know, I mean, I think that the best thing about being an only child are the pieces that you get back of yourself. in other ways, you know, so like self-confidence was something that can be a pro and it can also be a con. Mm-hmm. My parents forgot to tell me that it can be a con in the fact that people will hate you for it.
Yes.
Right. And that was something that I had to get used to, because to some people it reads that you brag or that you're, you know, arrogant or what have you. And it's just like, no, I can do that and I can do it pretty good. And, you know, I'm cool. I'll show you how to do that too.
Right.
That's how I was. But, you know, sometimes I can also be the stank only child too, that, you know, just pack it on up and take it on home. You just don't know nothing then.
Amen. Amen.
You know, just keep on. I'm not going to be worried with you. I done shook the dust from my feet and I'm out.
Hallelujah. Amen. Yes. Yes.
You know, the tolerance is quite different for foolishness when you're an only child. And like you were saying, yes. Toria, about being a kid that could engage with adults, I oftentimes got bored with other kids. It was like, dang, is this what y'all talk about? I just,
yeah. Right.
What happened on Scooby-Doo? What? No, let's talk about like Santa Barbara. Did you see Cruz and E? You know, Barbara. What about As the World Turns?
Right. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Leticia, you just said something that reminded me of, oh, Leaving and Shaking, right?
Yeah.
As an only child, I was not for the get down and spending the night, because I realized that when there were multiple kids in the house, you had to ask to go into the refrigerator. You had to ask to go into the cabinets.
Isn't that weird?
Right? Because, you know, if it's two apples and three kids, there's a problem. So you just don't go in there and grab an apple and there's not one for everybody else.
Right.
Me, as an only child, I never went and was like, Mom, can I have a Capri Sun? No, what? So then when I would spend the night and people were like, I'm thirsty, you know, they're like, we have to ask my mom. You got to ask what? Oh, hell no. I'm not coming, you know. And dinner was different. You know, if you got three or four kids, you know, everybody have hot dogs and mom and dad over in the corner eating steak. Oh, hell no. In my house, if mom was eating steak, I was too.
Right. I didn't understand the difference of kids' food versus adults' food. Right. We all went to Red Lobster. Well, I didn't.
Right. Yes. You know, and if you go to a house with multiple kids, it ain't no Red Lobster.
Right.
Top ramen. And don't get me wrong, I like top ramen, but I was like, I'm not spending the night. If I gotta ask for food in this house, I'm not spending the night.
And see, look, my situation was spending the night. My mom wasn't the sort of mother. She wasn't really open to me spending the night with too many people.
Me either.
Family,
absolutely not.
Family members, yes.
Right.
But even then, she was going through some of them. Like, nah, you ain't staying at cousin such and such's house.
Right.
You can stay with this one. Right. But if I only had one slumber party. And this ties into what you said, Leticia, about getting tired of people.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of the night, I was like, really, all of y'all could go, huh?
Well, right. You know what? I'm done entertaining.
I'm so tired. You know what
I mean? I had left my own slumber party and went upstairs and got in my parents' room and shut the door and slept on their floor. Exactly. I was like, this is it. Never again.
Yes, y'all have was too much for me.
Yeah. My mom loves to remind me. She said, babe, you'd be real quick to fall asleep on your guests. Like, they still be up. And I'm like, you know what? I got a bed. I didn't have a set bedtime.
Right.
So I don't know if y'all. I didn't have a set bedtime, but I was never a child that had a problem with sleeping. I was like, I'm tired. I'm going to go ahead and lay down.
Yes.
And I'm like, y'all want to be up all night? I don't.
But you also had, I don't know about you ladies, but you also had your own source of entertainment in your room.
Yes.
So, I mean, I could just go to bed and like set the timer on the TV and I'm out, you know?
Right. Exactly.
But when there are other children in multiple houses, like I had a friend one time, I did spend the night, and her sister, they got into a vicious argument about watching the Cosby Show or not. And so we were like teenagers, and I was like, are y'all seriously beefed out?
Right.
Like, they didn't speak to each other like the next day at breakfast. It was F you back. I was like, over the channel. And I went home and I was so thankful. I'm like, I watch what I want to watch.
Right.
When I want to watch it. Right. And if there's another, if that ain't happening, I go to another room, including my own.
Yes. How about that?
Oh, man.
Yeah,
that's so funny.
We do share similar experiences.
Yeah, we do.
Yes. But on the reverse of that, there was always someone living with us. So I got used, and some people may disagree, like in the family. So if y'all listening, whatever. You know, y'all definition of sharing and selfish, completely different than mine.
Mine
you know?
Too.
Exactly. You know, like, no, we're not going to eat out of the same bag of chips, but I will get you your own.
That's exactly yes. it. Why don't they think that that's nice?
Exactly.
Why don't they think that's generous? I
agree.
That is first consideration.
Right. Yeah, right?
I am saying to you, you are worth your own 25-cent bag. That's
exactly.
what I'm saying.
That's all I'm saying. But see, if it's multiple children, you might have to get one bag and everybody share it. Right.
See, I don't
miss me with
I
that.
Don't.
Yeah,
I will go without a snack. As a matter of fact, I was notorious for turning my. Oh, you don't. Oh no, I have no sharing. No, thank you.
Not even to this day. When you go out, and people are like, "You want to get a plate and split it? Why?"
No. And I'm not one of those individuals. Oh, what did you order? Well, I'll get this. And then you get yours.
Sure,
hell
yeah.
No.
What is that about?
Let me stop you right there. Please don't do that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes, Lord. Preach.
Oh, my God. These things are scaring me. This is
too much.
This is actually nice, though, to know that I'm not
the only one.
Not something that only children engage in at all.
Yes. But we always had people that stayed with us. So, like, early on, you know, my cousins came. Mm-hmm. But I did have to get the only child prep speech. My uncle, when my aunt and my four cousins came and moved in, my uncle came and, you know, gave me the little warm-up speech, like, Applejack, for Christmas, you know, this year is going to be different for you. Your cousins and your aunt are coming, and we're going to help them as a family, and they're going to come and live with you. So this year, you're not going to get as much because we're spending money to bring them here. And I was like, oh, see, I already don't like having brothers and sisters because I'm now getting shortchanged because somebody else is coming into the house. Like, how does that work?
Right.
You know?
Right.
But I learned when they came in, like, you know, working as a unit and sharing. And it was kind of fun, you know. Mm-hmm. Although they had to adjust to me and I had to adjust to them as well, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. But so I even posted this, like, I wasn't and you guys probably weren't either. Because some people think of only children as lonely children. I wasn't a lonely child.
No.
Not at all.
I think we make friends pretty easily.
Right.
Because our personalities are very big. We are forward.
Right.
And so, at least in my experience, I feel like I no matter where I've been, I've always been able to generate some sort of social circle.
Right.
So be these work friends, be these friends I end up having for life. I was never afraid to go to a new place, a new school or anything like that, because I was able to generate friendships without a problem at all whatsoever.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
But on the reverse, because all the people listening to us probably like, they just love themselves.
That's
spoiled.
The
they sound spoiled. That's one of our pros. When I think of cons, I'll never be an auntie.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, outside of, you know, marrying, that's the only thing. And then, I think, you know, if my parents were to get sick, I wouldn't have the help.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And I've said that to people that have siblings and they're like, doesn't matter.
You
because even if
have
you
it.
Have siblings, you may not get the help. It may still fall on one of the children's lap.
It seems to be that way. In a
it
lot
still
of families
seems to be
too.
The way. But that's the only thing that sticks out to me as being the only child is that one, you know, I'll never be an auntie. Like, I mean, and I have godchildren and I have friends whose kids call me auntie.
Mm-hmm.
And I take it to heart, you know, because it is just a label.
Mm-hmm.
But technically, you know, you don't have your own niece and your own nephew, you know, where you get to go pick up your brother's kids, you know, or you get to go pick up your sister's kids. So that, and then also, you know, thinking if my parents ever got sick, it all falls on me, you know, and who would be my support? But, you know, when I've said that to other people, they're like, well, you could have three other brothers and sisters and they wouldn't help you any daggone way.
Yeah.
And so that kind of sticks out to me. I couldn't think of any big cons, you know?
Yeah, there's really not a whole lot. Like, when I think about, like I said, my mother and my codependency. I realized for my mother, and I'm going to go back to the point you just made about being an aunt. For my mother, me being her only child, that just means a lot of times the sun rises and sets in me.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of her desires for me were already crafted in her mind before I was able to even formulate sentences or thoughts for myself. And so the decisions that I have made with my life, whether she approve or disapprove, she takes them very, very personally. Mm-hmm. And I think that has been a challenge in our relationship. My desire to establish myself as an individual independent of her, because I very much was, my mother's name is Patricia. I've always been little Pat to a lot of people. Uh-huh. We look alike. When I was in, you know, middle school, junior high school and high school, you know, we go get our hair done together. We get our nails done together. Like I was little Pat. And I got to the point where I've never been as, how can I explain this? My mother is the most put together, ladylike woman I've ever met. I mean, we talking, if her purse got a design on it, so do her shoes, so do her earrings, so does her bracelet. She and my biological father are something else together. So the two of you just are a walking fashion show. I don't even know how y'all could stand each other as a couple. It's just doing too much. And I'm so a jeans and t-shirts, sweats and graphic tea chick, you know what right. I mean? Not mm-hmm. not all glamorous like my mother. But I didn't mind being that with right. her. But as I got older and just got more comfortable with being who I am, that was a challenge for her. When I began to have some questions about the religion in which I was raised, and that put a divide between us, that was a challenge for her. When I decided I wasn't going to medical school, that was a challenge for her. And I realized again how many of my choices impacted her very, very personally. She mm-hmm. took these choices personally, as if mm-hmm. somehow something she did or did not do had an impact on them.
Right.
And I've worked very diligently, and we're definitely at this point now. I said, Mommy, what I need you to understand is that you laid the most awesome foundation for me, and I've never strayed away from that. Your daughter right. is a good person. Right. You'll never have to bail me out of jail. You'll never have to check mm-hmm. me out of the drug rehab. You won't right. have to worry about those kind of things, because I believe you've raised me to be a good person and to care about people. We may not see eye to eye on every single thing,
right.
but I'm never out here trying to do things to hurt or jeopardize other people or harm myself.
Right.
And so I think once I was able to articulate that to her, it put her at a place of comfort mm-hmm. and not having to worry that if I made a decision that was different from what she imagined for me, that somehow it was an off base thing or right. something negative as far as an impact right. on mm-hmm. her. Going back to what you said, Latoya, my mother remarried when I was 9, and my stepfather was her high school sweetheart. I've known him my entire life.
Wow.
But he had been married before and had 2 children. So I have 2 stepsisters who I've known my whole life, and their children, their daughters, and my one sister has a son. I consider my nieces and nephews, right. and we're pretty close.
Right.
I still feel, and then my father, my biological father, has a son. So I have a younger brother,
okay.
Who I have a really strong connection to. And, but I definitely recognize our familial situation is a puzzle.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. my sisters have a relationship with each other that they don't necessarily have with me
you.
Because
right.
they share a mother. My brother and I, there's always been so much distance between us, because we've never lived in the same city, really, since he was born. And so, you know, we do the best we can to maintain right. those ties and, you know, send pictures and Skype and all that sort of stuff to stay in contact and let family see family. But I always longed, as much as I enjoyed being the only child, I longed for a sibling connection. Right. And a lot of my really close friends, I would refer to as my brothers or my sisters.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
That does make a big difference too. You know, when you are an only child, I think that you are more careful with your friendships.
Yes.
At least you try to be.
Yes.
And when you do have people in your circle, they do become like a brother or a sister to you. You know, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow.
That's true. Yeah. That's so true that we handle our friendships differently.
Take them seriously.
Mm-hmm. We take them seriously. We know how to nurture them. I think because if you have brothers and sisters and you grew up in the household with, there's a different kind of tolerance and patience, because that person's always around you and you get on my nerve. And so when mm-hmm. you have friends, you know, it's like, yeah, you have friends, but I also have sisters and brothers. Although some people are closer to their friends than they are to their siblings.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe we value friendships differently, you know, and we treat them differently, because you know, I'll always be like, you know, been told, like, you're so sweet. Like, you're going to do that for a friend? Like, and you're like, why would you? Like,
right.
You know, and I'm like, I ain't got time for people. You know, like, I ain't loaning nobody no money. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing that. And you're like, oh, you know, my experience isn't like that. I don't have like a short tolerance or impatient with people because I didn't always have these personalities around me that drove me crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, there were people in the household and it always seemed like someone lived with us. But even then, like once my aunt and my cousins moved out, when my cousins were coming back to live with us, they were like grown and teenagers older than me anyway. Mm-hmm. So it was way different. But going back to something Kim said about the relationship with your mother, and I can say that all of us have spoken like we had really, really close relationships with our mothers. Mm-hmm. Because in this sense, and I know parents say today, like, I am your parent, not your friend. But mm-hmm. for me, my mom was like and is like a friend, you know, because you're two little women living in the house together. Right. And I see my mom go through being a woman, and my mom was always strong and independent and doing things. And at the age of 9, it was like, all right, when I come home from school, I'm going to cook the dinner. I'm the cook in the house. My mom didn't know how to cook. Mm-hmm. So we did function as mother and daughter, but we also had this friendship. And now I even feel responsible for my mom, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think it is because, you know, I still call my mom, I call her mom on this podcast, but if anybody's around me when she calls, I'm like, hey, Pamela, Francine, Francesca, Frankie Mae, Brookshire. You know? And I'm like, hey, Pammy Mae Sue. You know, people are like, and I've been calling my mom Pam, or not Pam, but hey, Pammy girl, like, since I was a teenager. And people are like, you call your mama that? Like, I'm being disrespectful. And I'm like, hold up. I'm never disrespectful towards my mom. But I was talking to Pammy Mae Sue, my girl. You know? They are two in one. And don't trip. I got her, you know?
Exactly.
And people don't understand that. You know, like, mm-mm. You call your mom Pam? No, I call my mom mom. But that's Pammy Mae Sue, my girl. You know? I'm like, hey, boom, quitter. And she be like, what's your little nappy headed self? You know? And then we go back to being mother and daughter. And I only think that can occur, that kind of a tension and that dynamic, when there is just one child. She didn't have to pour it on, you know, other siblings or spread it out mm-hmm. to other kids in the household.
Yeah.
And that does make a huge, huge difference. I think KC was saying that you lived right by most of your immediate family, your cousins and that type of stuff.
Yeah. My grandparents, actually, my mother and I lived in an apartment behind my grandparents' house. And then my uncle lived down the street and my cousin spent time between his home and her mother's home. So a lot of family close by.
I hear you. So I grew up with most of my immediate family we were in a small town. Okay. And we grew up like within 5 to 6 mile radius of each other. So I'm talking about grandparents on both sides, cousins, you know, uncles, aunts, that type of thing. And so being an only child, you know, like you said, when you wanted to dip into the busyness of a house that had more kids, you could go over there, mm-hmm. you could enjoy it, you could dip in, and then you could go home. Silence of just you.
You can
get
out.
You know, being an only child, for me, my circumstances were a little bit different. My birth was an anticipated birth. I do tell people, and it's the truth, I was a gift. My parents were waiting on me. They had a lot of fertility issues. And so by the time I was born, my mother was quite nervous. They said, my aunt, I don't want to reveal who that was. Whoops. one of my relatives that I interviewed for my dissertation actually was recalling when my mother was pregnant with me, and she was just saying that she was in denial about even being pregnant. So by the time I was born, not only was I born into an overloved situation, mm-hmm. I was also born into an overprotected situation. Mm-hmm. So when y'all were talking about the spending the night and stuff, I had a select few on the approved list. And, you know, at the time growing up, the Atlanta child murders happened too.
Okay.
And so my mother was like, oh no, there will not be a snatching of my little black child from nobody's corner, nobody's park, no nothing. So, you know, you have that relationship with your mother that is very, 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 very close. Mm-hmm. And my dad, that was, being a daddy's girl.
Amen.
That's one thing, you know, that I loved about being an only child was having that special relationship with my father. Right. And, you know, of course, I miss both of them terribly. And his anniversary is just a few days ago. And, you know, that's the thing when you were saying, Toria, about them getting sick. That is one thing that I wished. And I'm glad that I did have people who stepped up, you know, through the family, through church and through close friends. But it was harder you know, the distance going back and forth to check on them and all of that stuff. And I'm glad that I had people to do that. But the what your friend told you is absolutely true. It's harder to watch a family of siblings have that stuff tear them apart.
Right.
Oh, I mean, you know, one of my girlfriends, it's eight of them, literally eight of them, and everything fell to her and another sibling. Mm. And it was not just one parent in a comorbid situation. It was both, and they both declined extremely fast. Mm. And they ended up passing within a few months of each other. And to this day, they don't speak. You know, there was inequity of division of feelings, you know, who had the right to be mad about who didn't do what. I'm glad that I didn't have to go through any right. of that. Right. You know, I'm thankful that I didn't have to argue with anybody. Even though my father remarried, you know, there was peace there in that situation in the end, in terms of just knowing what was what and the provisions that he made for each of us. And, you know, there's no relationship there. But, you know, God bless, you know, right. we've went our different ways. But, you know, I think that that's the beautiful thing of being an only child. You get a certain resilience that other people that have siblings and other folks that they have that dependency on, that they, you know, you just get a different type of resilience. Mm-hmm. Do you guys think so?
I think so. I definitely think so. And speaking, you brought up, you know, being the daddy's girl, mm-hmm. right? It's so true, you know, and anybody can disagree, and you ladies might, but I will say, like, I have the best dad, you know? Mm-hmm. And the way I behave now is only a reflection of what he put into my life. And I just think of about a few months ago, my boyfriend and I went out for his niece's birthday, and I brought her flowers, and she was turning five. And mm-hmm. so her aunt was like, you know she's only turning five, right? And I said, girl, every little girl gets flowers. Like, right. I don't know a holiday when I didn't get flowers from my dad. Like, you know, when I was
little, I got right?
the ugly little Chinese mom carnation bunny rabbit where they stuck the flowers and made it look like a bunny. It was ugly, but it was 7-year-old appropriate. You know? I got flowers for Easter, you know, for my birthday, and flowers just because from my dad, you know?
Exactly.
And I'm like, that's how a little girl is supposed to be treated. You know, like, why wouldn't right. they?
Well, I'm going to tell you how I started getting flowers. There was a fateful Valentine's Day. I must have been like four. And my dad used to love to tell this story. He was like, I had to learn that I had a queen and a queen in training. So he would tell me real quick. I was so hurt. I didn't talk to him because he had bought my mama some chocolates and some flowers and me nothing. Girl, I was so sour with him. I wouldn't put myself down for a nap. When I woke up, I came out to that table and my PB&J had the crust cut off with a little side of chips and a little bit of milk and some flowers and some candy.
Right, like, get this together.
Ever since I was four, and I tell you, that is the one thing that I missed. I said, I am used to getting flowers. So, you know, when you don't get them, like you said, just because on Valentine's or whatever. And my dad used to do that for his nieces, too. You know, mm-hmm. I was at the grocery store today and I saw this carnation and I picked it up. Now, it ain't going to be the fanciest.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be that thought. So I'm used to thoughtfulness like that. And when I don't get that, especially from a man, it throws me. It's right. like, huh?
Yeah.
That's mm-hmm. the least, dude.
Yeah. Like, you didn't know?
Right. I love getting flowers, though.
See, and I have a very different relationship than you two ladies as far as my father and father figures are mm-hmm. concerned, because my parents divorced when I was two. So I have no recollection of them living in the same house together.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. My biological father and I are really good friends, and he was always very fancy and flashy. And I remember when he came into town, it was always like limousines and, you know, fancy yeah. places and all of the kind of stuff like that. But my daddy, you know, he lived in the streets for a while, so he was gone a long time in my life. But so I was a granddaddy's girl. My grandfather meant everything to me, and he was the first male figure that I can remember in regards to what I had in my mind in regards to how a woman should be treated. He was good to my grandmother. He was good to mm-hmm. my mom, and he was wonderful to me. And then I have a really great stepfather. And the funny thing is, my stepdad and I never even refer to him as a stepdad, only when I have to make the distinction.
Right.
that's just my dad. You know, he right. raised me, he fed me, clothed me, put me through college, all of that. And I sometimes think maybe he and I are even a little bit more closer than he is with his own two biological children, because we were in the house together.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so I'm very protective of him. And when I think about having to take care of parents, mm-hmm. for me, I always think of three. And I right. think that scares me a lot more. I feel like I'm responsible for all three of these people. Right. And when my mother remarried, it's so funny. One of my aunts, because my mom's very good friends, not that she had sisters, but she had really good friends who would spend time with me. And I refer to all of them as aunt. One of them, I was really salty about it, even though I knew right, right. my stepdad real well. I was like, I ain't trying to share my mom. I'm cool. And she was like, you have to understand, you're going to grow up one day. You're going to go away to college and your mom is going to need a companion.
Right.
And you're not going to want her to be all alone. Like, just imagine you're away at school and she's sitting mm-hmm. there having dinner all by herself. And I'm like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to stay right. at the house. And right. she was like, you say that now because you're 8.
Right.
But you know what I'm saying? It's going to change for you. Yes. And I'm so grateful that my mother found true love mm-hmm. Or reconnected with her true love, and that she's married. It causes me to worry a lot less.
Right.
And fortunately for me, because within recent years, my concern moved over to my biological father.
Right.
Because he's in Detroit. And I'm like, we're so far away.
Right.
You know, I'm like, Daddy, you don't have anybody out there. You know, my brother's in Alabama. I'm here. You know, if something happened to him, if, you know, he fell down in his house, who would know? He's by right. himself. And thankfully, he has found a wife who is a sweetheart and very loving. And right. it just puts me at peace and at ease with both of them, because I do think companionship does add to, you know, longevity in life and as a definite element of joy. And so right. I'm happy for both of them that they have partners that love them and support them, and that they're not alone.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, because that was a concern for me with them when they were both single and not partnered.
Right. Mm-hmm. I thought of another con. Because I was sitting here like, what? Because, I mean, we make being an only child seem so much fun Great. And lovely, right?
It's a wonderful upbringing.
One of the cons, and this didn't become a con until an adult, is that all of the pressure to make my parents, grandparents, relies oh, God. On me.
Girl, let me tell you, my poor father, he went on to glory just wanting a grandbaby.
Yes.
I feel bad for him because... it just wasn't gonna happen. He would call me, and one of his friends would have a grand. Yeah, I went over and saw so and so, got another grandson. I said, you should keep visiting those people. You go right on back over there. But he also understood a lot of the reasons that I was single, because I told him it was his fault.
Right.
He made this thing really impossible. I have expectations of what men are supposed to do, what I like, what they should do. You know, I'm used to a man driving. I'm used to a man, at least city limits. Now, my daddy did not drive on the highway at all.
Right.
But, you know, city limits, he got you. He
right, got you. Exactly.
But I'm used to, you know, somebody getting up and seeing the light bulb is out, or, you know, fixing stuff or looking for stuff to do. To just, the honey-do list was always done. You know right. what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And so, yeah.
Yeah.
Reminiscing.
And my mom, you know, mm-hmm. You know, my aunt, her sister had 4 kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, and 3 girls. So 3 girls, 1 son, her chances of having grandchildren are very, very high. And she does, you know, she's got mm-hmm. grandchildren and great grandchildren. And my mom is just like, you know, when I have my grandbaby, so that's probably one right. of the cons, you know, because they're looking, they're banking on me. And I'm like, Mom, you know, your gambling eyes was kind of low. You know?
Right. Right. It is a lot of pressure. It
you
is.
You had 1 child. You know, and I, you know, I let her know you never gonna have as many as your sister. You will never have as many grandchildren because my aunt has like 10, I think. Some of them, you'll never be a grandmother at 10. Sorry, you know, God willing.
Letting her know now.
Yeah, God willing, you'll get 1 because I do want them. But let me just let you know, and great grandchildren, girl, you ain't gonna catch up with her at all. You know,
let like, me tell you, yeah. Kevlar, brown sugar. About to set it like, yeah, yeah, y'all, yeah, yeah, y'all, yeah, yeah, y'all. Just my mic so I can touch it up right quick. Show me how Brooklyn do, you know what I mean?
What's up, y'all? It's your girl, KC, and I hope you thoroughly enjoyed part one of this very special edition of the Brown Girl Hour featuring Leticia of the Pisces Life podcast. Be sure to tune in week after next to hear part two. Peace.
Whatever else is left to it. See you all in. Now you about to rock them. Got your focus, man. Now they got a problem. Who you talking to? Some right there. The man in the mirror. I see him quite clear. Do your thing, Cap. Work it out, dog. Open up their minds. Be about yours. Silence everyone who ever tried to doubt yours. Get your mind right. Keep your sound raw. Heavy bass, man.